Hello and welcome to this episode of Macro Minutes ahead of the Union Budget 2021. I'm your host Kirtana Tiwari, here with Money Control's Arup Roy Chowdhury, and this podcast will act as the ultimate guide to what the budget would be like this year. Hi Arup, welcome to the show.
Hi Kirtana, good morning. We are just a few days away from what is probably the most awaited budget we have seen in recent times.
Yes, Arup. So can you explain to us why this budget is important and what it means for the country this year?
So it's definitely, all eyes are on, what the finance minister will bring, what announcement she will make, what measures she will bring forward. Because the situation the country finds itself in is unprecedented, right? I mean, you can say that her immediate predecessors, including the late Mr. Jaitley, Mr. Chidambaram, Mr. Pranab Mukherjee,
right,
Mr. Jaswant Singh, Mr. Yashwant Sinha, they all had to face difficult situations throughout their time in North Bloc. But I don't think any of them had to face a situation as difficult as this. I mean, if you want to make there is no direct comparison, but if you want to go back to a budget made under extremely difficult circumstances, that would be obviously Dr. Manmohan Singh's 1991 Union Budget. At that time, India was going through a huge balance of payments crisis. India's foreign exchange reserves were at just 2,500 crore. Compared to that, right now we are nearly at $600 billion of reserves.
Okay.
Right? So there's a huge difference. Right? So India was undergoing balance payment crisis and the economy was not in good shape. External debt was at 23% of GDP. Internal debt was nearly at 60% of GDP. And in those difficult circumstances, while the process of slowly opening up the Indian economy had started before that also, it had been going on through the late 80s. It was then that, over a period of a few days, the economy really opened up and, it is considered now a landmark budget. It was the liberalization budget. So
right.
The hope is that years from now, Nirmala Sitharaman's budget, which she will present on Monday, years from now, that budget should also be looked at in the same vein. Will it be looked at in the same vein? Don't know, but that's what the government's aim should be. That it should be as game-changing as the 1991 budget was. Because the challenges we face, I think, are in some ways bigger than what we faced then. I mean, there is a global pandemic. It is like the biggest pandemic since the Spanish flu of the 1918 Spanish flu. Right? And it has flatlined economies around the world. And as far as India is concerned, India has had the second largest number of cases of COVID-19 after the United States. Although right now, India has bucked the trend where increased mobility has actually not led to an increase in cases, but cases are gradually coming down. So that's a good thing. However, there was a lockdown, a strict lockdown for 3 months, and activity crashed, and that was shown, right?
Right.
We had in the April to June quarter, the largest ever quarterly contraction in Independence India's history. I mean, 23.9, 24%, nearly a quarter of the economy was wiped out. For the full year, RBI projects a contraction of 7.5%, while the government itself projects a contraction of 7.7%.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the first annual economic contractions in four decades. Millions lost their jobs. So a lot of those jobs have come back, but millions of white collar as well as blue collar, especially the blue collar migrant workers, they lost their jobs. And many of those jobs perhaps would never come back. While activity had, there was a bounce back, right? September, October, we saw strong bounce back. That was a pent up demand. Throughout August, September, October, people could not spend, people were saving up, and the festive season was there. So there was a pent up demand. But again, what we are seeing with some data from November, December onwards, that has sort of tapered down a bit. So the economy is not yet out of the woods. COVID is still very much here. A lot depends on how the vaccine program goes. There are concerns of whether there will be more contagious strains of the virus, right? More contagious mutations, right? So these concerns are still there. She needs to get back jobs. Government needs to push a situation where millions of jobs are created in the private and the public sector. A lot of sectors will take a long time to come back online. Things like, hospitality, restaurants, tourism, touch, what you call touch services,
yep,
which require more human interaction. So take things online. So yeah, lots of challenges are being faced.
Mm-hmm.
Exports were being affected. Inflation is still above, on an average, inflation is still more or less above the Reserve Bank of India's comfort zone.
Right.
Yeah, so in terms of challenges that the government face, this is probably be one of the more difficult budgets that an Indian finance minister has had to prepare in circumstances which are more challenging than most.
Right. And like you mentioned, one of the other challenges that we don't know enough about the future, and especially the timeline of vaccinations. So in that sense, what would you say is the government's biggest concerns? Obviously, healthcare would be, first on the list.
See, healthcare in the sense, health ultimately is a state subject.
Right.
Right. It is a subject under the state, not under the union. Well, the union has a big role to play. So a lot of that healthcare money will come from, obviously will come from the center, but also will come from the states. A lot of the distribution and the inoculation of the vaccine will be states. But of course, healthcare is a major concern. Governments are reactive, right? For example, it was after a horrific incident in Delhi in 2012 that the next budget focused a lot on women. There was an Nirbhaya fund. There was more push towards the gender budget, women's safety and all that. So governments are reactive. Whenever there is a clash, big clash at the border, or whenever there is a war, the next year you will see the government's defense spending increases. So the budgets are reactive. So obviously, healthcare will be a big focus. And if we are to believe, the Finance Commission has recommended the central government to massively increase its healthcare spending.
Right.
So that is one thing. Apart from that, the biggest concern for the government would be job creation. And while some people have been asking for an expanded NAREGA plus an urban version of NAREGA, jobs guarantee program, the thinking from what we know so far, and the budget may contain those recommendations, but from what we know so far, the more than an urban NAREGA, what the government would go for is a massive infrastructure and public investment program.
Mm-hmm.
The government's thinking is that if you pump in money, whether it's from the private sector, from the multilateral institutions, as well as from the government, if you pump in more money into massive infrastructure projects and speed up and expedite their work and their completion, that will obviously create activity, that will obviously create jobs. The mm-hmm. more infrastructure projects you push, the more jobs it creates. And that will be sort of a direction through which the government is looking to increase economic activity and push the demand side. Because remember, all these measures in Atmanirbhar Bharat and all the measures that we saw in March, last March, and then May, and then October, and then November, all the announcements that Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman made, they were more towards the supply side and more towards the credit side. Now is the time when the industry is expecting a demand push from the government in the budget. Industry and stakeholders are expecting that the budget will be the one which will have huge demand push. So one of the ways is infrastructure, obviously. The government also needs to take this opportunity, because the FM herself has said that out of crisis comes opportunity. The government also needs to take this opportunity to push some reforms across sectors. Some things have been done in the previous Atmanirbhar Bharat announcements. But for example, privatization. This is something that the Modi government has been talking about a long time. The government needs to push it this time, because that will be a valuable source of revenue. At a time when tax revenues are stretched, sources are apart from tax revenue, like privatization and all, spectrum sales and all, that's something the government needs to push. Yeah.
Right. Now, coming to privatization, last year we saw a lot of announcements regarding that, especially the disinvestment of LIC. Can you talk about what we'll see this year in that front?
So, actually, it was 2020 when the government thought it would go big on privatization.
Right.
That was before that, because remember the last budget was read before pandemic really hit India. I mean, there were a few cases which were coming in from travelers coming in from China and Europe and all that, but it really hit India and before the lockdown and before the economy really took a beating.
Yes.
Right. So in 2019 itself, the government had identified Bharat Petroleum, Container Corporation and Shipping Corp for privatization. Air India was something which had been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They had not managed to complete the process, but there was already expression of interest which were invited a few years ago. They did not get many takers. So government decided to tweak some of the conditions and go for a fresh round of expressions of interest for Air India. So they were hopeful that they would be able to complete a lot of these privatization transactions in 2020 itself. That's why they had kept a very highly ambitious target of 2.1 lakh crore, which is like the highest divestment proceedings in any given year have been in 2017-18, mm-hmm. when the government earned 1 lakh crore from privatization. But a lot of it was because of its own two public sector ETFs, plus buybacks, plus a lot of this money came from merging PSUs with PSUs. Now, this is different. This is outright privatization. You are not selling a PSU to another PSU. The Modi government has shown keen interest in exiting certain sectors where it feels it has no business being in.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the announcements by Nirmala Sitharaman on strategic sectors. There will be some sectors where the government will completely exit. So because of the pandemic, a lot of these plans could not fructify. So now we come to 2021-22, and there is hope that, you know, the LIC IPO was also planned, which we think will happen in 2021-22. It could not happen in 2020-21. The government is confident that it will be able to close Bharat Petroleum transaction in the first half of the coming year, coming fiscal year, be able to, you know, privatize Bharat Petroleum. Air India, because the aviation market is in turmoil, there is less of a hope, but that's something we have to wait on. The Life Insurance Corporation IPO, planned IPO, is something also that we are looking at in the first half of the coming fiscal year. Then there is also companies like Nilanchal Ispat Nigam Limited, Central Electronics Limited. The government has revived the privatization efforts of Pawan Hans, that state-owned helicopter operator. So a lot of these plans are taking place. But what we have to be careful about is that there was something which was before the pandemic as well and will continue. That is sort of a cautiousness on behalf of the bureaucracy.
Okay.
Right? So the government officials are sort of wary of taking certain decisions, especially with regards to privatization, because they don't want 5 years later, the Central Vigilance Commission or the Central Bureau of Investigation or CAG to come back later and ask, because we have seen what happened with certain privatization cases which happened during the Vajpayee era, right? Some of those court cases are still ongoing. So while that political backing is there, it has been very difficult to convince some of the ministries to let go of their companies, because ministries look at their PSUs as their crown jewels. So that process has been happening all this while, and now one hopes, now that the pandemic is sort of behind us and the economic slowdown is sort of, you know, passing through, and, you know, one hopes that next onwards there will be a big push of privatization. The government will actually be able to get a lot of money from these, you know, these big ticket divestment names, so to speak.
Right. Now, Arup, you mentioned earlier that this will definitely be one of the biggest budgets that, you know, people in the future may look behind as a landmark. But also, I mean, I think many people would be interested to read it after it gets uploaded on the budget speech when it gets uploaded on the internet. Can you tell us how to, you know, decipher it?
Yeah, so for our layman reader, for layman listeners, and actually hope people do this more often, like people who have just even a passing interest in the budget, they should probably read the budget documents more carefully.
Right.
So within half an hour to 45 minutes of the finance minister's speech, all the documents, all the budget documents are uploaded onto a website called indiabudget.gov.in. I'm repeating that, indiabudget.gov.in, right? So budget speech is there, but that's only a small part. Although it's an important part. So obviously, you know, if the text is there, it's in a PDF and a Word format. You just go through the speech. Part A of the speech deals with the various announcements of the government, what it will do for various sectors, you know, what the government's vision is. What its future, what it, how it sees the economy panning out, and what it will do for various sectors, agriculture, rural, students, professionals, women, social development, infrastructure, gives targets like what its fiscal deficit will be, what the divestment target will be, how much it will borrow, what it will do for capital markets. Part B of the speech is the tax announcements.
Mm-hmm.
Direct tax, whether there have been any changes in tax slab, what SOPs are being given to various people, various groups. Any changes in corporate tax, excise duty, customs. Other indirect tax like GST, that does not come under the budget. That comes under the GST Council. It's the GST Council which decides any changes in GST. So that is not covered under the budget. Within the budget, within the speech, after the speech ends, in the budget speech itself, in that document itself, after the speech ends, there is an annex. That annex gives you breakup of all the structure changes, tax slabs and all that. That gives you a breakup of which schemes and which ministries are getting how much. In short, that gives you a breakup of extra budgetary resources. How much is the government getting apart from tax and non-tax revenues and apart from borrowing from the bond markets?
Right.
There's something called extra budgetary resources. So how much is the government getting through that? And then you have a lot of documents. You have the finance bill, because ultimately budget needs legal backing. That legal backing is got through the finance bill. The budget and the finance budget is discussed at detail in Lok Sabha, since it's a money bill. It only needs to pass through Lok Sabha, but it's all discussed in both Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha. And the finance minister, through the course of the budget session of parliament, answers both the houses, their queries. And it's a finance bill which is passed. And finance bill can also be used to make changes in other acts. Like, you can change, depending on the announcement, you can make changes to the RBI Act or Banking Regulation Act or Income Tax Act or Companies Act or any other act through the finance bill also.
Right.
Then there is something called the budget at a glance. In brief, it will give you details of the main targets: tax revenue, non-tax revenue, capital receipts, administrative expenditure, capital expenditure, fiscal deficit, revenue deficit, and nominal GDP. You know, it gives you all. It also gives you, in short, details on, you know, how much is expecting and how much the government is expected to spend in various schemes, the 30 centrally sponsored schemes and the lots of central sector schemes. Centrally sponsored schemes are schemes which are financed by both center and the states.
Right.
Central sector schemes are ones which are only financed by the central government. It will also give you a breakup of what the government's expectations are in terms of spending on food subsidy, fuel subsidy, fertilizer subsidy. These three are the biggest subsidy. Then you have the receipt budget. Where they give you a breakdown of how much they're expecting from, you know, income tax, corporate tax, GST, excise duty, customs, and non-tax revenue like telecom, like licensing fees, like aviation fees, and also like divestment and all, how much they're expecting from each.
Right.
And there is also a section called expenditure budget, where you can see each and every ministry's allocation, like a breakup. This ministry is getting this much for this scheme, for this, for that, and all that. So it's a very detailed document. And then there is something called the medium-term fiscal framework, which is mandated by the FRBM Act. FRBM Act is the act which governs the making of the budget and the government's finances. Right? And here, the government gives the underlying assumptions for its expectations. What are the underlying assumptions? What are the forecasts under which it has made the budget? And also its expectations from the coming 2 years. So a lot of what the government does, a lot of what the government plans to do, a lot of where the government plans to spend, how much of the center's revenues will go to the states, how much money will the government give to the states and union territories, these also are there in the budget documents. It's a very interesting, enlightening document, and I feel more people should actually, you know, take time to go through some of it.
Right. Thank you so much, Arup, for all these details.
Yeah, so let's wait. Next week, you and I will be having a very different conversation depending on how the budget goes.
Yes, sure.
Thank you, Ketana. Thank you so much.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of the Macro Minutes podcast. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views, and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.